And I say the I say that when I've discovered the typewriter. Hold on till I answer that. Can't spell incorrectly either. This is awful.
You listen, Granddad. Can we record a podcast now, please?
Yeah, go fire ahead.
Hello and welcome to the 300th episode of the Echo Chamber podcast. And thank you so much to everybody for joining us. This is brilliant, actually. I'm looking at all the names flashing up on the side of the screen, and it's very flattering. It's amazing that we're doing this. It's bizarre, these circumstances. We kind of would have thought we would have been doing this maybe in a different live setting. But nonetheless, here we are, and just want to take this opportunity to say thank you to so many people. But I want to be very, very, I want to name a few specific people. I want to name Kira Kenny, who has done our images and our artworks from the get-go. I want to thank Stephen Kelly, who does a lot of our graphics, unseen work, even our little, when we put up the things for pods that are coming out, Stephen works on those, and he's a good help to everybody across the Tortoise Shack. Ivan Corliss does our website and corrects the things that we break all the time, and is very good to us with his time. Ivan.ie, guys, if you have any website ideas, you might as well give him the plug, because he does it all for us, and he's a top guy. And then I suppose, you know, I hate to say it, but also Martin, you're not the worst.
Listen, just before we go ahead, everybody, just be cognizant of the fact that Tom. A year older tomorrow, and happy birthday to Tony. Yes. What age are you going to be, Tony?
41.
41. God.
It's this time last now, year Tony. We were at a party in down the road in Glasnevin. Yep.
That's right.
But, listen. Look. We are delighted to be joined live in lockdown by a friend of the pod, actor, comedian, writer, messer, Instagram story champion, and my good friend Tara Flynn. Tara, good to see you.
Hello. I forgot it was your birthday tomorrow, but happy 300. And then I put picture of a tortoise because I can't draw. So the picture of the tortoise should go there. But happy Tortoise 300. To both of you, congratulations. It's an amazing achievement.
It is. And I said it, actually, and you wouldn't... I mentioned during the week that we started in October 2017 as... Your man knocks on the door on a Thursday evening and says, you said we were doing a podcast, so we better try start this thing. And, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing, and we still kind of don't know what we're doing. But there's been a lot of great moments. But one of the reasons it was great to get you in was because it was then February of 2018 when we were still kind of putting out these weekly pods where a feature...
But
someone rang me and said, oh, you're in the Irish Times. I said, what? He said, yeah, the weekend edition of the Irish Times. Tara Flynn is doing what she's watching, what she's reading, and what she's listening to. And she said, I'm listening to the Echo Chamber podcast. They allow these conversations without the need for fake balance. And then she gave us with the classic, I don't always agree with them, but I do like listening.
Yeah, I don't always agree with what they say now, Joe, but... No, but I think it's important when you get a chance like that to, you know, it's lovely to say if you're watching something on Netflix or whatever, but it's important to use those moments where you do have access to a big platform to give people a sort of shout out if they're trying something, if they're making something. And, you know, and the other thing is through listening over time, of course, I've become indoctrinated, and of course, and now I agree with everything you say. It's only now, of course, I agree with everything you say. So I'm very, very honoured to be here. I honestly can't believe that I'm your guest today on your 300. But it's very exciting. But what an achievement! Like it is an overcrowded market. But you're doing something different, and you're managing to keep afloat. And I know it's a challenge, so I'm going to switch to being interviewer for 1 second and say, how have you done it? 300.
It's more actually just keep going is the secret, wasn't it, Martin?
Yeah, just keep going.
It was the resilience there of, of someone said to me when COVID kicked in that, you know, with the downturn in advertising revenue, all of these media companies are going to hit the wall. And I said, well, that's grand, because we never had anybody who would advertise with us anyway. So we weren't viable before COVID. So let's just keep going. Yeah. And, you know, it's actually been slow, but we've managed to have a good time with the we've really enjoyed it. That's the secret, isn't it? Getting to speak with the great people.
We both like to talk, and
yeah,
we talk all the time. And the other thing is, we can be really grown up. We can really have an argument with each other, yet be very grown up about it, and just say, well, we've had the argument, let's get the next episode in the can. And that's kind of how we look at it. It works. Not really sure why it works, but it works. I definitely think the combination of the two of us is better than any one of us on our own. And I think that makes a difference.
I think it's very clear that you're passionate about what you're saying and doing, and that you have that integrity where you're saying what you really believe. You're not ever playing devil's advocate, which honestly leaves me really cold. When I hear it now, those dispassionate political programs, I just think it's far too easy to do that. It's far too easy to stir up all kinds of division using that kind of technique. And actually, it's not as interesting. It's not as interesting as hearing two people who really care about change or making things better. And sometimes that the wit and the laughter around it too is really important. And guys, that's why I stay.
I love though. What Martin was saying there about the fact that God knows we have blazing rows.
We do, yeah, we do.
Blazing rows. And quite but often...
It's excellent makeup sex though, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's never been better, Tara, to tell you the truth.
Aww,
you know?
This is so touching.
But,
anniversary show, love it.
Yeah, but we have also... One thing, if we're going to take any credit for anything at all, it was the idea of being able to look around and say, who's saying, making an interesting point that we'd like to talk to, and could that work? You know, could that be, will people tune in and listen to it? Because there was a gap in that market. I know the podcast market is saturated, but it was very much it was not us going out, and we've had some great big high profile people who we've interviewed, but they weren't the ones that caused the best reaction we had, the audience that came for you. And they came for the guys who, the Sinead Mercier's, who came in and blew us away when she just spoke about what Just Transition was, long before I'd heard it said anywhere else, really, you know, so that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and then obviously listening to people like yourselves and a lot of people on this call, on this right now, who've recommended people to us. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's always refreshing to hear people that don't get a chance to go on a mainstream or quite conservative national show, let's say. And this means you can reach an audience and not be interrupted. There's time, there's scope. That's why I love podcasts. And it's interesting that you guys have really managed not just to survive but thrive in the kind of, let's use market as a loose term, but it's insanely competitive out there. But you are definitely giving people something of great value, and I'm going to cry because you've reached 300. You guys are all grown up.
Speaking of insanely competitive, what is it like to be Ireland's premier comedian?
What?
Speaking of
Martin, the second set, the second line of that is Ireland's premier comedian who also played the Cadbury Bunny voice. That's
yes, sorry.
People get very excited about that.
I didn't know that was your voice.
No, in Ireland, I did it in Ireland, and I did it like once, maybe twice. I can't even remember. It was in the 90s, but it was a redub for a product that was coming out in Ireland, and a caramel product, and yeah, so I did play the bunny. So I had to spend a weekend learning the bunny voice and doing all that. I think the bunny was Miriam Margolyes. I'm not sure about that. I've said this before, and I keep going to meaning to go and check. But yeah, so it was a very established voice artist regardless, and someone who just did that the whole time. But even to be the sub bunny was brilliant. It was a very high honour. And it's just always fun to visit those tones in the voice.
Oh, well, to be able to say I was a sub bunny.
Yeah, that's really cool.
This is becoming Glow West, isn't it?
This is Glow West. If people haven't listened to Glow West yet, it is such an excellent podcast. They have to get down with Caroline.
Thanking you, little plug.
Joe, I will go on to the comedian section, because I even saw, you know, when we were at the Improv at Christmas, and the guys were up on Monday evening, they're doing their set, and it's fantastic. You're up on stage, and your people are shouting out random things. I see now they've moved to doing something similar to this on a Monday evening, and you can go in on Ko-fi and buy them a cup of coffee, as they say, and.
Yeah.
How are you finding comedy in COVID?
It's a very strange one, because of all things, it's one of the hardest things to move online in a weird way. And that's from someone who I used to kind of, I think, came to some people's attention for doing stuff online. And it's very weird, because you need that engagement with the audience, particularly for something like improv, but for anything really, and even a couple of hosting things now that I've been doing that they're hoping to move online. They're not sure if they will. It's interesting, because I think the sets have to be tighter, because you're not getting those laughs back. I think you're never sure, especially if it's new material. How do you know if it's funny? That's why I think things like the improv could move quite well online, because the lads are interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And they could do improv. You can do improv about anything. So you can do an improv about being on Zoom or being in lockdown, or you could be on a space station communicating with each other. There are no limits with that. So in a way, that is great. But other than that, it's quite tricky, because where I wanted to move this year was the show I did with This Is Pop Baby, about in the run-up to Repeal, and about my own story of having to travel. So it was 10 years after, and it took me that long to process it and get it into a show form, that kind of storytelling. I wanted to do more stuff like that, where there was a central point or a little bit of meaning, and then just a really fun ride for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, well, that show was about your playing like a secret agent, though.
Yeah, I was a secret agent who had to get to travel for healthcare. That is now legal, though, not fully accessible to people. We gotta get off my high horse now. But I wanted to do more work like that. Now, unfortunately, that requires a sort of a small theatrical setting, but with enough people there to make it. Maybe it could be done online. Maybe, but I really think the audience is such a part of theatre. In French, you know, in French they say, so if you go to a concert, you say, j'ai participé à un concert. I participated at a concert, in a concert. And I think there really is something in that. I think a lot of live performers really, some stuff will move online very fluidly, very easily, and some stuff just won't. Mm. It doesn't flourish there. So we're all finding our feet, and we're all trying stuff. So that's why I've done those mad little stories on Instagram, on IGTV, just writing stuff and reading it out to people, playing with a few little characters, and just stuff that is amusing me and hopefully giving people a little bit of a break. But it's the only way I can think of right now to keep giving people something, and to keep giving myself an outlet.
Yeah.
Because I was hoping by now, I had a show in for Dublin Fringe. No one knows if that'll happen, if the Fringe will happen, if I'll be in it. No one knows. We don't know. But that show, I was hoping, would be in some form of rehearsal by now. I would definitely have done some dry runs, just reading it out for friends in the flat. And all that's gone. And all that sort of organic building process of something that becomes theatre, that's gone. And we don't know if it's coming back or in what form. I have great hopes that things will come to some kind of a way we can all reach an audience, or that organic build will happen again. But we don't know if it will, and we don't know when. So we have to find ways to keep making. And I suppose that's where the Instagram TV stories are coming for me at the moment, just a way to keep writing and keep making and keep engaging.
Yeah.
Then we'll see. So it's a huge question, really.
We're all facing that uncertainty, but you know, we had this uncertainty around, but also, you know, we have to also try and remain positive. We have to, and I have, you know, like we struggle. We're all come. Some days we're up. Some days we're down. Usually I'm down when I'm trying to get your man to do something or not tweet something. But he can help dictate my mood when I wake up in the morning and check what he was saying to Donald Trump and, at 5 a.m. But irrespective of that, do you think that? The work now, people will just crave to see more stuff. When, you know, hopefully this is going to create a built up, a pent up desire for more of more entertainment, more face to face stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I think people will be hungry for it. I think people have realized how hungry they were for it before and how much we all took it for granted that we could be in a space building a thing, making a thing and doing it together. Even if someone is presenting something to you, you're still part of it. And be that music, be it art, going into a gallery. And being, I think that will come back fairly soon, fairly early on in the process. But I think people will be hungry for it. And things are still moving. I've heard of a couple of things now that at a production level have moved on, and they're moving into, they can't be filmed yet, but they're moving on. The Dublin Fringe might happen. It's also an exciting time because work will grow out of this too. I'm not saying people are all writing their novel now, because not many people are. Not many people who were creative for a living are finding it easy to create right now because fear takes away that imagination part of your brain. Mm. And everyone is scared or uncertain right now. So that play, you have to play to create, I think, and or certainly the stuff I'm interested in watching is created like that. And a lot of that is gone. But that doesn't mean it won't come back, or that other people who work a different way will find their niche now. And it'll all come to land. At the moment, the snow globe is being shook, and yeah. it'll all settle. It will all land, and it really won't be too long. I mean, it might be 2 years, but actually, that's not that long. And we'll all find. I'm starting to write again now. It was longer term projects, but it's taken that 2 months to just go, oh, where am I? Who am I? What's happening? And just block all that out and go right. Forget all that. What's the story that I want to tell right now? So fingers crossed, we'll be all going to the premiere in 2 years.
And you were saying about the creative side of your brain that, you know, it takes a while for that to kick in because mm-hmm. of the situation you're in. But you had previously lost the funny side of your brain for a little while, and that's kicked back in again. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, I suppose, it's good to talk about this, really. But yeah, during the repeal campaign and just after, and the abuse that I took surrounding the repeal campaign, because so many people worked so hard on that, and a few people are here today. Hey, you amazing legends. But what that did then was not only did the work go away because I was persona non grata, because I was too much, or it happened for a lot. Lots of people. There were lots of people who worked in the entertainment industry who wanted to say more and just felt they couldn't because of the work they would lose or what have you. But then there were two aspects to that. But with the burnout that all campaigners experienced, you know, be they down in a rural part of the country and going leafing or just having the chats, or people who were in offices above in Dublin. So I was sort of somewhere in between those two, I guess. I wasn't in an office in Dublin, and I wasn't out in one of the trickiest places in rural Ireland, taking all that abuse. But it was daily, and it became my job in a weird way. It took up all my headspace, and any creativity was going into how to tell the story I was telling, or how to find language to make things easier for people to hear or help them to get into what they might find to be a contentious subject. There was no space for writing anything gash except my own story, except finding ways to take the piss out of myself, really. Mm. But thinking of other stories about characters that aren't me, or that was almost impossible. So to come up with maybe two or three characters now already this year for a couple of different bits of media. One is a telly idea, and one is a book, and one is a stage show. They may never come to fruition, but those characters have come up now. And that bit in my brain, that took a long time. By the way, 2020 was meant to be my big foray back into the world of theatre. And I've rung casting directors and said, I'm back. Woo! yeah, yes, see me for everything. I don't care if it's a guy's role, just see me for everything. They're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, sure. It's good to know you're chomping at the bit to get back into all that again and be a bit more competitive. Well, you know that meme, my plans, 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
Same as the rest of us. But it definitely was like, okay, here's my creative brain is back and I can't wait to just do gas stuff to make people laugh, give them a lift.
No, it's been though. It's like when you think of that in terms of, you know, the best laid plans, and then, you know, it's across the board, it's across industries, it's across society,
in every industry. Yeah,
yeah. But like it has to be, you know, again we see today, and I don't want to politicize this podcast again too much, but again, you know, you see talk of, oh, this 350 quid is too much, and we talk about how much goes to the arts, and you know, you're going, okay guys, you know, it can't just be an afterthought. There needs to be, it can't just be that we'll bring you out on St. Patrick's Day to put a bit of what was the phrase you used? Soft power of get a bit of cultural credibility. You know, the Taoiseach going to the Bernard Shaw the day before it closes down. Oh, Buffy the cat has arrived.
Buffy's in the room. It is. It's very strange. Actually, I don't know if people know Maria Bamford. She's an excellent comedian. She talks a lot about her own mental health. So it's that sort of work I'm very interested in, where someone takes something that has been traumatic for them and still makes it really properly funny. Sorry, getting the cat out. But she did this brilliant thing, and I think about it whenever artists are asked to do, well, you've got public speaking skills, so you do that. That's easy for you. Go out there and do it. Just sing us a song. Tell us it. Go out there and you speak to crowds. Go out and do a church. No bother to you. And she had this brilliant thing of being asked to do gigs for free by some office she was working in. And they're kind of going, what do you do at weekends? Oh, I won't do it justice. Do go and check her out. But it was sort of like, what do you do at the weekends? Oh, little skits and gigs. Oh, okay. And then asking her to do some benefit, host some benefit. And she has this brilliant line, which I love. And I say to myself all the time, where she goes, oh, I get it. So Dirty Monkey, not okay, but Dirty Monkey Dance.
Oh, God. Like,
that's how it feels to be an artist in Ireland.
A lot.
Like, yeah.
The only problem is now, that's after getting Martin's now all excited. So sorry now.
I'm going to ring up all the agents and say, look, 2020 is my year. Don't mind Tara Flynn, it's my year.
Blew that wagon. She was the rabbit in the 90s. She's had her time.
Look, I got actually just Martin on that though. You must be the only person who's thriving on the idea of always being miserable and locked away. And
I think maybe my Twitter persona comes across as miserable. Most of the time, I'm in great form, absolutely great form. So, what's there to be worried about? I've been used to this social isolation thing for ages. Doesn't bother me in the least bit. Quite happy to stay indoors and talk to people over line. Yeah, it's grand. Absolutely grand.
You're one of the only, you know, there's always that social media thing where someone says social media is toxic. and it's immediately.
Do you see what Rachel O'Neill has just written?
Yeah, she just said, you're miserable bollocks, Martin.
But I, you know, and yeah, discourse can be toxic, but I'm kind of hopeful that because we've been forced to be apart so long, that we're trying to talk to each other in better ways. That's my hope anyway, that we're trying to find other ways to not be such abrasive, even if it is online. There was a while when this started that I think it was probably really bad, because people were going through a stage where we didn't know where we were going with this and how long it was going to go and what it meant to everybody. Changes in jobs, changes in things. But there's just too much. Fighting for the sake of fighting on it. You know, just I don't like him, therefore everything he says is invalid. And I think we might see an end to that over the next little while. That's a little bit of positivity for me, anyway.
I'd love to think you were right. I mean, it's the first time since lockdown has been the first time since I left 2 years ago that I've missed Twitter. It was a great format for me. I love to write in those bite-sized chunks. I used to love to do jokes. I used to, I just wasn't allowed to go back to that. Once I had started campaigning with through sketches that I wrote for marriage equality and just being an ally there, because I was able to write some stuff that counteracted some very silly stuff that was made with a big budget, and I was like, well, we can counter that. We'll do it for, you know, we'll do it on favors, but we'll counter that by making our own videos, stuff like that. But once you start speaking out, then suddenly people think and especially when you then share a very personal story or part of your life, people think they own you. They've already got this entitlement on Twitter to debate me. And actually, some things are none of their business. The fact that you've shared a personal part of yourself doesn't mean that they get to have every part of your life or every bit of your privacy. And I was only ever there to speak about one aspect of it, one aspect of my life, which was then kind of politicized. And because it was part of a campaign, it was political. But then people going, well, you don't give a shit about homelessness. And I'm like, I'm not a minister. Like, I'm an actor. And it was just really bizarre, that ownership. And then when I tried sort of initially dipping my toe in to go, all right, just even for a couple of weeks, just to go back to telling jokes or doing that short form sort of just quite positive or a bit of crack or cat videos, I wasn't allowed to. And it was like, then it was sort of like, oh yeah, you were just in it for yourself because you now don't want to talk about those things anymore. And I was like, but I'm not an expert in those things and I'm not a pundit. And for me then, Twitter became about someone else had the narrative about me and they could make stuff up and rip up a whole shitstorm about something that wasn't true. And even countering it was going to whip it up even more. So I had to just say nothing. And then it was like, so I can't actually be me on there. I can't even just be the funny version of me on there because they're not going to let me. And so I just went, here I come, Instagram, cat videos aplenty, selfies with the sky, you know, basic bitch, here I am. But that's so that I'm happier there. I'd love to think you're right. Sorry, that was very long.
People are raising the point that they're introducing a new tool that'll limit people, that, you know, people can't reply. They're testing it, and that's not. Can't reply to a tweet. Yeah. So you know, so you can limit who can reply to you, and all of this sort of stuff. So there's all sorts of things. I see Simon McGarr is online. He's making the point that the ability to choose which part of a person's life they want to make public is key to right of privacy. If we aren't able to draw that line, we don't have privacy. And I often think of that in terms of, we make the comment that something like Twitter is a public forum, privately owned. So you know, there's also that dichotomy there of who's making who are the decisions, the key decision makers, and where does that go from?
We're allowed to have boundaries, and it doesn't matter if you're in a public space. So let's say, you know, and I wrote this piece, Storm, for the Irish Examiner a few weeks ago. I put it up on my own blog, so it's on taraflynn.ie. And it's about what it feels like to be at the center of a storm like that, where you lose complete control. It's not just online. It's happening online, but you're not. You don't live online. This isn't Tron. So it's like everything's happening around you and about you, but you're not part of it. And you can't even, as I say, you can't even counter it. And it's like, so even people with a lot more money and clout than me, people with millions of Instagram followers or whatever, or Twitter followers, they are also allowed to say, you've seen my work, I've gone out to talk about it, I've done the chat shows, I now don't have to answer every single question on every single topic just because you fancy it. And that whole thing of just because someone is public doesn't mean you own them, and it doesn't mean they don't have boundaries and that they shouldn't be allowed to have them. Now, I also don't want, and I put it into Storm, I had to put it into that piece. This isn't to say to use the Be Kind hashtag to not have people who are, let's say, public servants or taking public money, not to be accountable for shitty behavior. Like, once, and for them to weaponize all this by going, oh, 30 people got onto me and said that I was incorrect about that fact that I knew nothing about, and I checked it and it is incorrect, but they all came at me. It's like, that's not coming at you. God bless your innocence. But also, why not just say, I'm really sorry I got that wrong? And honestly, it tends to end then. It's like that. But
I happen to think that people are going to come out the other side of this now, whenever the real other side of this, not the false starts, but the real other side of it, that they're going to come out and do everything to excess. Everything.
Maybe.
Everything. They're going to drink too much. They're going to screw around too much, buy fast cars, expensive hammers.
You've been reading my diary.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I think we could do it like 5 years ahead-inism. I think we could really do with it.
That's, the people listening here are all agreeing. They're all saying rides for all, hoofing for all.
Ride for Ireland is the last song in Not a Funny Word, the show I made in 2017, that Ride for Ireland is the closing song. And I am, if I don't get that fecker into the Eurovision someday, then my work is incomplete.
But I do think we'll come out to excess, but that also includes with entertainment. We'll want to be entertained like we've never been entertained before. I think there's a real opportunity in that. Do you get any feel of that?
Of wanting more entertainment?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my interest is in the show I want to work on next is provisionally titled Cheese, and it's about the things we do for relief. Like when I was grieving, and that's another thing actually. So in 2015, I shared the story of having to travel for an abortion. But it was only like 4 or 5 months after my dad had died. And then this whole very public wheel started turning. And then at the end in 2018, after the repeal referendum happened and it was a good result and all of that, I suddenly went, crash, I've got unresolved grief here. It's been bubbling away for 3 years and more. And then it was all about just wanting to feel better. And I wasn't going to Tolstoy for that. I was going to Real Housewives. I was going to Judge Judy. I was going to those made for TV true stories, like of a high-powered lawyer in New York who doesn't know true love. She goes home. She goes home because her grandpa is dying. And so I, it's all about that stuff and just pure crack. And that's what I'm gasping for right now. And so I think that show will either be the thing people definitely want to see after lockdown, or it's going to be so fluffy and they'll perceive it as trivial. The show's actually about grief, but they'll perceive it as so trivial that they go, no, I want something really meaty. But I hope there's a hunger for it, because we're all going to have stuff backed up.
Yeah. And the bills aren't stopping, by the way. They're still coming in.
The bills aren't stopping. So
have you told people about your little studio you've built at home?
Yeah, I have, for in case voiceovers come in, and please, you know, we are available for work if you need us. I also do caramel rabbits.
I have a beer, guys. This is getting.
I now have a USB mic, and I go into. I put the couch cushions in the corner of the bedroom, and then I put the duvet over the clothes horse, and I go in under that. So that is my setup.
I think we were I've seen at least with at least there maybe, you know, people talking about voiceover work. Oh, I have, and again, this is me going, and you didn't agree this, but we've all watched Normal People on here, more or less, and I did hear your husband's dulcet tones in one of the episodes. Yeah. as a professor.
He's in episode 10. He's also available for work.
But he wasn't a bunny. He just, that's just
true. Oh, Martin, what a voice. What a voice. Like chocolate in the ears.
Yeah, so he's a Normal People. So, he got that lovely day. And that was nice because, I mean, Carl actually, he joined me on one of the videos I made years ago called Racist B&B.
Yeah.
And he plays the American tourist coming to the B&B. And from there, though, feck him, casting director started ringing me going, wonder what your husband auditioned for, blah, blah, blah. Sure, I'll let him know.
He's a handsome man.
Anything for a middle-aged woman.
You'll be playing.
I can also do not resentful. Not bitter. Hashtag not bitter.
90210, where everybody who was supposed to be a teenager was in their 30s. You know? Remember those days?
What was it they used to say about, what was it? Oh, what was the one set in Orange County? The OC. They used to say about the OC where old parents are 32 and the kids are 29.
Yeah. So Simon wants to know if we have any voiceover rates and what if he has some work. I can only say for people I know that voiceover rates are very reasonable.
Here's the other thing about voiceover rates, and it's something I talk to younger people getting into the business, or I used to when the business looked like the business used to look and there was a bit more predictable. It's always unpredictable, but this has made it very unpredictable. But the rates card that we have now, the basic rates card that was agreed by Equity and IAPI, the Irish Advertising Practitioners, was set when the euro changeover came in.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been changed since. So individual agents will now round it up a little bit or push a bit harder. But I heard your chat with Emmett, and it was sort of like, not only did austerity freeze things and people go, you need to do this for exposure and all that, culture really got it. That was always there, becoming really entrenched. And you would just have to do something for nothing just to be working, just because work breeds work, particularly in this industry. But for advertising, which we all have to do because it pays, and a lot of the rest of the arts doesn't pay, and it's something that it's a skill we can bring and it's something that does pay eventually. But the rate card was set, the baseline rate card was set in like 2001. Hasn't really changed since. Now you can, it's a baseline, so you can negotiate up and your agent can or whatever. But people are scared too, because they don't want to price themselves out of competitive pricing. And so we're locked in rates that were acceptable in 2001. And it's you have to have real presence of mind and real confidence in yourself to go, I'm worth that baseline. And a lot of people will go, oh, they offered me 50 euro to do it. And I went, well, just make sure it's not going out on telly. Because that's a rate, and a baseline rate from 20 years ago that you should be getting. So it's also about watching your back and not being taken advantage of. And when you take that 50-euro gig, you just say to everyone that that's what we're all worth. And
that's the level, yeah.
That's worth holding out and just saying there is actually a rate card for this. It might be out of date. You might be worth going and getting an agent and just making sure you are looked after. But it's one of those industries where you really do need to make sure you are looked after. And you're grateful for I'm certainly grateful for any gig I get. Hello. I'm waiting by the phone. But it is, it's definitely something that, especially if you're trying to get into the business, and I'm sure it's something, because it is something that could be done remotely, people will want to move into, but watch your back and get your work. Yeah. You know, it's a competitive industry, but it's an industry where there is some money. So make sure that you're not the one being cut out of that.
Martin, can I come to you actually? Just going back to the idea that this, by the way, it's mad to think, I'm looking at the people who are here. Thanks so much, guys, for being here. It's amazing looking at the names. You're some incredible people. Martin, three, did you think when we started that we'd be sitting here after doing 300 of these things?
Yeah, I just thought we'd be richer. I'm being completely serious. I am 100% serious. I thought yes, we could, because the niche didn't exist in the market. There is to this day, there is no left-leaning radio show on national radio. There is none. Zero.
I don't know.
No, there really isn't. There really isn't on national. There isn't anybody who leans to the left like we would have the guests that we have in, Tony. It just doesn't exist. I would have thought that people would have put more value on it because we know a lot of people listen. It's much easier to sell the right than it is to sell the left. And I find that disappointing. I find it disappointing that if you and I wanted to tomorrow just to make money, we know exactly how to do it, but we'd have to sell out everything we believe in.
Oh, just grift.
Yeah, we'd have to sell out everything we believe in. And I find that disappointing that the people who are making money are the ones who have to sell out.
Caroline's after asking, how did we meet and how long did it take? We met on Twitter, and how long did it take just to argue over starting a podcast? Do you want to tell what happened when I said about a podcast?
We, between me and Tony, we knew that we were kind of doing content. We were both blogging and we were doing content, and we had a little discussion. I said, look, we've got to throw something out there that we can market to people.
No, you didn't. I said, what did I say?
He said, we were talking about Martin, and Tony said, we'll do a podcast. And I went, great, great idea. What's a podcast?
So we spent 15 minutes explaining what a podcast is, and that was the. But I will say, I went home thinking, look, that's grand. I've put it out there. I said to him Thursday evening, it'll never happen. And I was sitting downstairs on the couch on a Thursday evening. There was a tap on the door, and the fucker came, and we had to go up and do it. And we that actual headset that he has on him now was one of the original headsets. And we had that those headsets and an iPad, and you could only record in 12-minute blocks on GarageBand, if you remember. So we had to stop every 12 minutes and start again. We were absolute chaotic mess. We hadn't a clue what we were doing.
We did discover very quickly that guests were vital, and that nobody's going to tune in every week just to listen to me and him, but that we needed people who knew what they were talking about, no matter what angle they were coming from. So guests were important to us from very get-go, and selecting guests and choosing guests, we put a lot of time into that. We were very deliberate about who we bring on, and we want to promote people who aren't mainstream, and that's basically it. That's our agenda, is to bring in those voices that are important but aren't mainstream.
Sitting down talking to people. I'm conscious, in fact, Philip O'Connor is here from Sweden. Philip knows all about the fact that all the work has dried up for, say, journalists. You know, you're freelance now, you're struggling with that. It's similar with this. Like, we are very lucky that we have patrons who chip in and keep us on the road. But my God, like, when the amount of money that was going out every month, and the other problem is, and it's my fault more so than the other things, is that we were ferociously independent. We wouldn't give over any of our intellectual property to any other organization, you know, because other people did come sniffing around and say, would you platform with us? Would you come on with us? And we'll host you for free. We'll do that for free. And we were always adamant that, no, we won't. And even the other podcasts that are on with us on the Tortoise Shack, which delighted, you know, when you're working with Rachel Disturbing the Peace and Caroline, and you're talking to them and you're saying, actually, whatever happens, the IP, the intellectual property is yours. You know, we're just the platform. You help us. You help lift up our what we do. We elevate us. But it's absolutely yours. Your work as the creator is the work that has value, even if, as Martin says, it's not exactly paying off. You know, it is what it is.
It is strange, though, how people will, and I mean, people will listen to you guys every week, and almost as valuable as a financial contribution, though. I wonder if you agree, but almost as valuable is sharing it, and people are willing to take free content. And I think the problem then is they feel like, especially with comedy, but even with something like this, where it sounds, you put all the work in advance, you've got your own presenting skills, and then you sort of just chat, and it sounds like just chat, but it's actually really well researched, and you've got skills, and you're prepping and you're organizing and you're getting the guests. And there's an awful lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and people just kind of, they see, because they can just access it in a very easy way and it's going straight into their ears, they kind of go, oh, this is just a lovely chat. They don't think about the amount of work you're putting in. And I think sometimes when it's got a big shiny radio station name slapped on it, they think that's serious work. That's big work. As opposed to, you're doing more with less.
No, we've no choice. You have to.
In fairness, and I'll hold my hand up, Tony does the horsework, and he does the vast amount of horsework, and he really does. And he's great on prep, and he's great on doing due diligence. Me, can a lilt, rock up, don't know much about the person, sit down, and it's like I'm meeting them for the first time.
Tell the truth. If someone came in and they have their Twitter handle is YayMan26 and their real name is Darren, he says, so YayMan, how are you keeping? And it's kind of heartbreaking, you know.
But listening is great. Listening is great. But sharing.
Colm O'Regan says Lilt comes in tins, folks. So
he's right. He's actually right. It's a tin lilt.
Listen, right. And Kenny loved Lilt as well. He loved Lilt. So, you know, great people have had Lilt before.
Yeah. But if people enjoy the show, honestly, I'm just saying, like, please do share it on any platform you can. Tell people about it, and, you know, or even go back over old episodes and across the platform, the Tortoise Shack platform. Share it. If you can't contribute financially, and people are pretty stuck right now, sharing it really helps. Rating and reviewing it on various platforms, that really helps. So if you can't throw a fiver or 2 euro, whatever it is a month, don't leave the lads hanging. Give them a birthday present of sharing it like hackers.
Are there any questions, guys? I can unmute mics if you want to ask questions, or you can just do the ask a question facility if you want to. So, like, we're happy to answer questions. I don't, or just even have a general chat. Like, and I'm conscious there's two already.
Who have we got? I'll just jump in here.
Philip wants to go first. Go ahead.
No, there's one thing I'd just like to do. I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise publicly to Tara Flynn for when I went to see Not a Funny Word. I was in Dublin reporting on the abortion referendum for a variety of different people, and I went to see the show, and Tara was doing it twice in the same interview. So I was going to watch the first one, then record the interview with her, and then run off. But I sort of arrived in very late, and I took a seat in the corner, and just as the show was starting, I went, Tara had actually come out, and I went, shit, I better mute my phone. And just as I did that, I've been videoing a protest on O'Connell Street, and that started to play just as Tara started the show. So I thought I'd just make a public apology for that. She has already forgiven me, but I just wanted to put it on the record how much, like, I mean, we owe Tara a huge debt of gratitude for everything that she's done in terms of these campaigns. Yeah, listen, Tara, I know there's a lot of people besides, but we want to give you that. But also to the two boys, because it's one of those things that, like, in all the things that I've written since I moved to Sweden, I often thought, I mean, we talk about the echo chamber, but I kind of felt like I was standing shouting in a forest for the most part, because it just seemed that nobody ever understood anything that I was trying to tell them about. And then when this came along, when the echo chamber, the Tortoise Shack came along, and all of a sudden these ideas that I've been sort of, you know, espousing for a while, and going, oh, maybe you would like to look at this, you know, and all of a sudden they became things that had been discussed. And what Tony and Martin have done is they've created a whole new space for things that just never happened before, for discussions that never happened before. So the three people that are doing this is not a question. This is just the biggest thank you, or the longest thank you that has ever been on the Tortoise Shack, to all three of you for everything you've done. And as somebody else said there, just long may it run. Just keep going. However hard it gets, it has value. It has enormous value. And people are realizing that more and more every day. So thanks, kids.
Thanks, Philip. There's one message here from Rachel. Do we think, because of the nature of the podcast, that it will be perceived as male, pale, and stale? So that's obviously directed at you, Martin.
I don't know.
Come on in, Rachel. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. No. And that might seem weird that I'm asking that, given that myself and Caroline are also, you know, on the platform, as is Ruthie Fitz. But I'm always just wondering, because, like, obviously, like, you two, you guys are the main pod that comes out of the Tortoise Shack. You are. So I'm always wondering, because it's such an easy criticism to throw at the two of you, that you're straight, white, male. So I'm always just like, does that ever bother you? And is that why you brought, that's obviously not why you brought the women in. But, like, has that ever been a concern for you guys, I guess?
From day one.
Yeah. We can't help that the creative idea to come up with this was by two guys. We can't help that. We are two guys. So do we say we came up with this idea, but because we're two guys, we should drop one of us and bring in a woman instead? No, it was our concept. We came up with it. We worked it. We've put an awful lot of work into it. If people take exception because it's our gender, then they're not listening to what we're talking about. It's not solely about gender. We do discuss gender issues. We do discuss all types of issues. Now, we are very, very conscious of having a balance. And we are very conscious of having a balance. But as for me and Tony, no, I don't think it would work with any other two people.
What I will say is, it's also been something we've had to learn a lot about as we've gone along. We've had to educate ourselves. Actually helps when you talk to people like Rachel, like Tara, like Caroline, like Sinead, all these wonderful women, Saoirse McHugh, who come in and they educate you, and you're able to then understand that when, you know, if you're looking at something and you're going, okay, we're doing this thing or we're doing it on housing, okay, why can't I, if I can't find a female academic, I haven't tried hard enough. So you have to actually, when I say yes, it's something that bothers me. It bothered me from day one. It bothers me, and it does be something that I try to make sure that we maintain some sort of balance. And it definitely will. It's always going to be that way, I hope. Can I just? There's another couple of questions. I think, Eileen, did you have a question?
Oh, well, I was just asking about the future direction, Tony, and you've done so much, 300. What's left? Where are you going to go? I suppose, personally, let's hear a little bias in. I think there's more you could do in the art now, and they are going to be struggling. So that'll be a new, well, not a new, I mean, I know you've done bits in that, and they've always been fabulous, you know, so there's probably a big unmind.
And, I mean, we haven't done enough with writers. We haven't done enough with writers, I don't think. But it's very hard when, like, you know, you get swept up in a political cycle. You get swept up in like, a general election that just consumed our lives for a few weeks. And then we thought that we were going to get a break. And then COVID hit. We were like, oh, okay, we'll go. We were doing nearly daily podcasts. And then it was like, okay, we'll go back to maybe one or two a week. And then it was like COVID. Yay. So, yeah, no, we do need to broaden it. There's no question we need to be able to talk to. And actually, I think it's unfair to, in other ways, to, for me to use this as a stick, as a crutch. But some of the content that the other podcasts do on our little team are just so good that I feel that they do it better than we do. Like, there are so many situations, and I hope that the ladies will agree with me, where we talked about people who maybe we should cover our topics, and they are topics for those podcasts, and they do them better. So, you know, we need to also be conscious of not being always putting ourselves going, oh, because we were the first one here on the scene, that we get to pick and choose.
That all starts with awareness that you guys have, and you know, we can all improve. We're all learning, and we all hope to improve, and we all are dealing with internalized biases that we all have. But at least you have that awareness, and that's a start. And lots of shows or panels or whatever don't. And again, we can all improve. But I think you're doing a great job. And like, it's not, I think it's year 300.
I think it's interesting that if I was to say to Tony, best construction expert that we know.
Orla Hegarty. She's here, by the way. She's here somewhere.
We'll just automatically...
And we're saying that with Lorcan Slurs on the line, so...
Yeah, sorry, Lorcan, but we will always... You know, if we want to talk to somebody about a Green New Deal, who are we going to go for? We both have the same names off the tip of our tongue, yeah. Always. Sinead Mercier would be the first person I would go and ask a question to. Absolutely. Anything to do with rights issues, Izzy Kamikaze. Can't go wrong. Izzy will put you on the right track if you have a question. Mm-hmm. So, you know...
She said that out of fear.
She had me warned before the show started to mention her. So, I have to mention Izzy.
Brian, you wanted to ask a question, did you?
Yeah, how are you folks? How are you?
How are you, Brian?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to echo what other people have been saying and just say thanks for everything you've done over the last 300 episodes. I mean, for me personally, when you started, you were two lads I liked on Twitter, so you kind of listened to show the support, you know, and get you to see you get off the ground. But you brought on a lot of guests that we knew of. You've been great supporters of ICHH. I know Claire's on the line there, and I think it's 3-2 to Anto in appearances on the podcast up to now, which is a bone of contention. But what you guys also did for me is, your presenting style drew me into podcasts on subjects I would never have had much of an opinion on or really known a lot about. So you're kind of responsible for me now thinking I'm an expert in a lot of areas that I really am. And so I just want to thank you for that. And, you know, also just wanted to say that, as people are aware, Tony's running 2,020 miles for ICHH and Anna Leafy this year. So you can go to tortoiseshack.ie/run2020 to support his efforts there. And just to wish you all the best for another 300 and beyond.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Listen, there's if anybody has any other questions, it's you know, other than that, I do just want to say, Glenn Fitzpatrick, you need a haircut. That's pretty obvious. And then, you know, thank you so much to everybody who has tuned in. Thank you so much to everybody who has, and it is important that we share, because there's no advertising revenue here. You know, we had a laugh the other day when I saw Eamon Dunphy had a front page ad on the Irish Times about his podcast. And I said to Martin, imagine how much, you know, putting your hands in your pocket and trying to come up with a quarter page ad that said Tortoise Shack.
Now, I would just like to say that in a very personal sense, what I have gotten most out of this is I've learned so much by osmosis, so much from all the guests that come in. I mean, the housing, we
start employing it, please, will you?
When we talk about housing, we're coming from a depth of talking to people who've come in and covered it from every single angle. It was the same with pretty much any subject we covered. And it's a great personal pleasure to listen to experts talking about what they know about. It really is a great personal pleasure.
I'm going to be really cheeky now. Lenny, have you got something to say?
No, I just managed to get on. I was hoping I was going to get you for the last 5 minutes to see your lovely faces.
Yeah, look, I appreciate it. I thought we'd arranged a song, no?
Yeah, I was going to put on my Marilyn Monroe outfit and sing happy birthday to you.
I thought we were getting Martin's abs as well.
No, listen, it's been a pleasure to do this, and it's great to see so many great people here. I do hope that we do that. This is only 300 is a great milestone. It's nice to mark it. It's great. I'm delighted that it's with Tara, because, you know, when we met Tara first, it's unfair of me to say that we knew each other really well a couple of years. We didn't, but we're good friends now. And, you know, we have our moments, but it's just, this has opened so many doors. So thank you to everybody. We really appreciate it. Look, if you want to have a chat, guys, you can unmute your mics. I'm happy enough. We don't need to record anymore.
Thank you for having me, and I can't believe that I got the honor of being on your 300th episode, and I can't believe you two are all grown up.
Now, if you want to unmute your pod, if everybody wants to unmute for a second, I told Tony I was going to do this.
Oh, yeah.
So if everybody'd unmute for a second, and start. Let's just sing happy birthday.
Yeah. this
will not work. I'll start us off.
There might be a terrible time lag. I have to tell someone who's been singing over Zoom.
This is going to hurt everybody's ears, Martin. Let's not
do it. Really will.
Ah, come on now.
Are we following your conducting now, Mark?
Okay, ready? Here we go.
No, is it going to be a refrain or what?
Oh, no, we just go straight through. Straight through. And here we go. On the count of three. One, two, three.
Happy birthday to you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
And you looked like one too.
I didn't even do a Patreon shout, Martin. What are we coming?